Having just dealt the last year with the VA for my father's Agent Orange-related claim for Parkinson's, it was interesting to see that. It was a long process, but sticking with it, we finally did get through. I've been surrounded by Agent Orange my whole life, actually. I was born in Camp Drum, New York, which is where one of the first testings of Agent Orange took place. Then I moved to Okinawa, Japan as a toddler, where now they're finding that might also have been. It's still a little uncertain what was on Okinawa. So whether my air base, like the ones in Thailand, were sprayed, or my army base was sprayed at the perimeters. My house was right on the perimeter, so who knows. But anyway, and then my father was in Vietnam. So I become involved in this issue basically over the last more than a decade, having worked in Vietnam and having met so many of the Vietnamese who've been affected by Agent Orange, and my involvement grew and grew over time. I have nothing to disclose. I work for a nonprofit. I am not a medical doctor or public health specialist, and working for a nonprofit, I have no money, but this is Agent Orange, one of the barrels. I won't go through the slide because we just covered that in the last one. But about 14% of the land in South Vietnam was sprayed. About 35.4% of it was sprayed more than once. And as was mentioned briefly, there are, in Vietnam today, there is the concern of current dioxin hotspots. I mean, it was sprayed 40, 50 years ago. Areas that were sprayed have found not to have residual dioxin. It's not that it disappeared, it went somewhere, and it's still uncertain where it might have been carried. But we do know that there are potential hotspots around former U.S. military bases in Vietnam where there was a lot of the perimeter spraying during the war, and the ranch hand bases, which is where the herbicides were stored, loaded onto airplanes. And of those bases, there's three that are of major concern right now that are public health issues. Thankfully, the Phu Cát base, we can now take off the list. Phu Cát was a rural air base. It was one of the ranch hand bases. The Vietnamese government, along with the UN, have taken up the contaminated soil and put it in a secure landfill, so it is no longer a public health threat in Phu Cát, at least. Bien Hoa base, unfortunately, that's not the case. Arnie tested in Bien Hoa probably, 20 years ago at this point, right, Arnie, and found more than a million parts per trillion of dioxin in some of his testing. Other testing done more recently has found, the Vietnamese found up to 5 million parts per trillion, and which are absurdly high levels. The problem, of course, is that this dioxin is still getting into the food chain on the primarily through fishing that's done on ponds on base, raising of ducks, and then, of course, the people who are right on base being exposed to that contaminated soil. At the moment, there's some testing that's being done on various technologies, but it has been put on the list by the Vietnamese government for future cleanup. USAID is planning to start an environmental impact assessment in early 2013 to get a better sense of the extent of the contamination in Bien Hoa on the base and then surrounding communities as well. The base that you may have heard in the news as of recently, which is the Da Nang Air Base, one of the major ranch hand bases, that currently is in the beginning stages of cleanup funded by the U.S. government in cooperation with the Vietnamese Department of Defense. This is an active, whereas Bien Hoa is an active military base still today, Da Nang is the major airport that you fly in and out of to Vietnam. So you I don't have a little thing pointer, but the is there one? Hmm? Oh, the mouse. Well, oh, it's one of these little things. Oh, there's one here. Okay. Right about here is where you get in and off the airplane. And we used to be that until they built the new airport, your plane would be parked about 100 yards from a major dioxin hotspot. So, of course, it was a major concern. But a big concern is these are all houses surrounding the base. And at this end of the lake, of the base, are lakes that until recently people were fishing and raising ducks in. And Vietnamese who were raising or fishing in these lakes have found to have extremely high levels of dioxin in their blood today. So clearly it's a big public health concern. And right now the U.S. is funding the cleanup of that base. That's supposed to start, preliminary stuff has been done, but the actual beginning to construct the process, they're going to use something called in-pile thermal desorption. So what that means is they will build a structure that will, they'll put the contaminated soil in, they'll heat that, they'll have these thermal, I don't even know what you call it, I'm not a technician. Yeah, that will heat the soil up to, I forget the name, it's like 355 degrees Celsius or something extremely high that will break down the dioxin. And that is due to be the process to decontaminate the soil and sediment on the Da Nang Air Base is expected to take about 4 years, sometime towards the end of 2016. These are some of the mitigation efforts that have been done to date. One of the interesting things that was done on the base was that the EPA and the Vietnamese Agency of Science Technology, I think that was what FAST stands for, conducted a bioremediation of, they took some of the soil on the base and tried bioremediation as a technique and found it to be successful, though you wouldn't do it something like Da Nang where you have 635,000 parts per trillion, but in a smaller site where the levels of dioxin aren't as high, bioremediation may be a likely solution in the future. But it's still only laboratory testing and more has to be done. As I mentioned on that map, previous map, there were lots of little dots, and those are former military bases, including Phlai Khu, where your wife was. That's one of the areas that there. This information was done close to 10 years now by the Hatfield Group, which is in Canada. It's a private firm that does testing throughout the world. And they limited from the thousands and thousands of military, where military was present in Vietnam, the list down to about 28, 30 potential hotspots of military bases. What we don't know is what the extent is at this point. Some limited testing has been done, and dioxin has been found in some of the areas, but a lot more needs to be done to figure out the level of dioxin contamination and where on the base. As with Da Nang, the problem is here and here. The rest of the base is fine, so that same type of testing has to be done on these other bases. Other potential hotspots are in Vietnam, are, as I said, where the dioxin went after it was sprayed. You know, it was sprayed throughout 14% of southern Vietnam, particularly in the central highland areas along the mangroves. Years and years of rain washed away that dioxin, but where did it go? Right now, Jeannie Stellman, who I think you might have mentioned her information. She's putting together the ranch hand spray records into a database that will be available online shortly and interactive, so that you could look at the actual spray run to see what was the intended target. I mean, there's a question of how far off drift and whatnot it went, but at least you'll know where the intended target was. And potentially, you could then look at the geography and hydrology to figure out where potential where that dioxin potentially migrated to, and then figure out whether it's a public health risk that needs also attention to be cleaned up. But that's down the line and lots of money. Speaking of money, A lot has changed in the last 5 years, thanks a lot to my wonderful senator, Senator Leahy of the state of Vermont, has been behind this issue of getting to ensure that there is funding in the U.S. government funding streams to address this issue in Vietnam. It started off slow in May 2007, and with $3 million over the next few years, to now to the point where the fiscal year 2013 budget, the proposed was $25 million, of which $20 million would be for environmental remediation and $5 million for public health or health programs in Vietnam. That wasn't passed, so but we're down to the continuing resolution, which is $20 million for cleanup, and $15 million for environmental remediation and $5 million for public health. But IS took years and years and years and years of advocacy and pushing to get the U.S. government to first admit that Agent Orange was a problem in Vietnam, and we've been able to work with them on the environmental front very, very well. They've not only agreed to clean up Da Nang, but now to address Bien Hoa. So that area of the environmental contamination in Vietnam, I think we're on pretty good track with the U.S. government on that, of getting the resources, considering they're the ones who dumped it there and left it there. But on the health front, that's a little bit more difficult. So as you see, most of that money has been either obligated or planned, is addressing the environmental remediation. So far, there's been $3 million that went to three different NGOs in Vietnam to address the health-related programs. So that was to provide some services and rehabilitation for children with disabilities, and that went to East Meets West, which is here in Oakland, Save the Children, and an organization called Vietnam Assistance to the Handicapped. So that was the first pocket of money, the $3 million over 3 years. There's another grant that's in the works, which is a $9 million 3-year grant that will hopefully soon be announced to much of the funding goes to USAID and will go to an American organization to address, again, public health issues in the Da Nang area. But it also has two sub grants that will do a pilot birth defects registry and a pilot cancer registry that I don't know the details of that, but it will probably be within Da Nang as well. But that's the first time they've really looked at both the cancer and the birth defects part of this equation. The language, this has been a lot of pushing, a lot of advocacy to get the right language in the bill. It started out just looking at remediation of dioxin-contaminated hotspots and to support health programs, and then in fiscal year 2012, another component was added to it to direct USAID in consultation with the committee, which is the Foreign Ops Committee, Department of State, Governor of Vietnam, and other interested parties to develop a long-term plan. And they had a somewhat open, they accepted recommendations from the public for this, and some of us in this room submitted that. And if you go to the USAID website, you can find what others have suggested or some of the priorities. Majority of them were addressing some of the health issues, rehabilitation. But what has happened with this, USAID kind of sat on this for a long time, that Senator Leahy's office has now given that duty to, has found a way to make sure state has taken over this consultative process. Still yet to be determined what that will look like. And then in the most recent operations bill was language to make sure that the money gets to Vietnamese organizations. The normal funding channel is USAID. We'll give it to someone like East Meets West or Save the Children or one of the other organizations. And we, a lot of us who are working on this issue, really wanted to be sure that the money goes directly to those who are going to be there when the NGOs no longer have the money. They're going to build the infrastructure on the ground for the Vietnamese Ministry of Health, the Ministry of Social Labor Affairs, to build up the rehabilitation centers, the healthcare facilities, so that when, you know, eventually, you know, it's difficult to get money through Congress for anything, and it's not reliable, but at least you're not just giving it to an NGO and then 3 years later they're walking out the door because they don't have the money. We've been pushing to make sure that the money gets to build the infrastructure on the ground that is needed. For years and years, the U.S. and Vietnam would not, couldn't even see eye to eye on this issue. They've finally now at least get to the point where they can discuss the issue and then address the environmental hotspot part. Every year, the U.S. and Vietnam have this joint advisory committee meeting, and for the U.S. members, it includes Department of Defense, Department of Health and Human Services, you know, CDC, Department of State, Environment, EPA, and USAID, and then the counterparts on the Vietnamese side. Office 33 is part of the Ministry of Natural Resources and the Environment that is in charge of addressing this Agent Orange issue in Vietnam. So they actually sit down, and now we've got to the point where the U.S. used to say this was propaganda from the U.S. government, I mean the Vietnamese government, and there wasn't an issue, to actually sitting down and being able to dialogue, though still not agree on the environmental, I mean the human health side. Part of the problem is identifying who was exposed and who's been impacted in this by Agent Orange in Vietnam. The also work by Stellman, who looking at her spray data and then identifying how many hamlets were underneath the sprayed areas, determined that between 2.1 and 4.8 million Vietnamese were directly exposed. That doesn't include the soldiers who came from the north or the soldiers who were in the south. That doesn't include, migrating populations, obviously. So that number is a little loose. If you use the VA's boots on the ground, 5 minutes in Vietnam, the population of southern Vietnam was about 17.6 million at the time. Then you have the populations around these hotspots. It could be, several more million who are living around current dioxin hotspots in Vietnam. And then in Vietnam, of course, you have the offspring of those who are exposed. As the previous presentation, it was a lot of focus on the men because it was 2 million men who went to Vietnam, and it was about 8,000 veteran women who were in Vietnam. But the Vietnamese, half of them were women. So you have a completely different exposure to the civilians and who were in Vietnam, and there's also different ages. It's the difference between if you were a young male exposed in utero. I mean, there's so many other complicating factors. So it's really hard to... I would not want to be the epidemiologist who did that. So I need to figure out how you factor in all these complicating factors of the people who are exposed at different ages and different times, and over 10 years is a lot of complicating issues. But the Vietnam Red Cross, this is an old estimate from about more than almost 20 years ago at this point, 15 years ago, estimated that there's about 3 million Vietnamese who are suffering the impacts of Agent Orange. So that's the cancers that, many of the things that were on the list for the VAs. And of that, the number of children, and children we're talking not just, under 18, we're talking 30-year-old children of those who were exposed. 300,000, I've heard 500,000. I mean, we really do not have a good survey. And part of the problem also is that different areas of the country were targeted differently, and some were multiply targeted. This is just a chart. We're trying to get a sense using Jeannie Stellman's data of the areas that were most heavily targeted. So that would be and it's similar to that map, Dong Nai, Bien Phuc Binh Dinh. That's the three core, but also areas of the Central Highland where you may have not as much population, but that particular population was sprayed 3, 4, 5, 6 times. So it's hard to get an exposure. Okay. The list of conditions that the VA, the Vietnamese say are related to Agent Orange are very similar to the VA's list, though they differ in the, obviously, the birth defects, reproductive abnormalities, spinal bifida, but the birth defects of all kinds. And it tends to be, this would be what would be a typical child affected by Agent Orange that has severe physical disabilities and, you know, inability to walk or move their legs. There's no real diagnosis because getting that, this particular child lives a good 20 kilometers from the nearest medical center where they could diagnose such a thing, and you're not getting this child on a motorbike, which is the mode of transportation in Vietnam. I'll skip over the rates of disability and just to say what things are being done. And the Vietnamese government does provide stipends to those affected by Agent Orange, though it tends to be those who serve for the North Vietnamese Army at this point. Though if you fall within the category of poor and disabled, you might get some support. But then there's organizations like the Vietnam Association of Victims of Agent Orange, the Vietnam Red Cross, who don't discriminate depending and provide support to those affected. The Vietnamese have developed a national action plan over the next 5 years, and that includes mitigating all of the heavily contaminated areas, providing support for women who are pregnant in heavily contaminated areas, and providing for rehabilitation medical services. And there are many NGOs, or quite a few NGOs, working on this issue, but they're only reaching about 10% of those affected. So we have a long way to go to reach out to the areas across the country where there's heavy populations of people affected, but also provide the infrastructure, the rehabilitation centers, the training of social workers, of physical therapists, occupational therapists, speech therapists. I mean, there's literally less than a dozen speech therapists in Vietnam. So we've got a long way to go to provide human resources as well. And being an advocate on this issue, my sense is the U.S. government should increase the amount of money that's going for medical and health. Yes, address the cleanup, but that's at least that same amount of money should be going to healthcare. So,
thank you very much. I'd like to make a couple of quick comments. Gene Stellman and Steve Stellman's talk about exposure potential where they believe the Agent Orange was sprayed. It doesn't mean that it got into the food supply and got into the people. That would be biomonitoring, which Dr. Owen described and which we did with the Vietnam Red Cross and other government agencies for many years, and found that some of the Vietnamese now are still getting elevated dioxin from Agent Orange, mainly through their food supply. And again, the 12 or 13 or 14% of the south of Vietnam that was sprayed by those fixed-wing aircraft does not include the north, which was not sprayed, and does not include all of the south. So there's a discussion as to whether how much environmental testing will tell you versus biomonitoring of the blood or milk and people. And the first Vietnamese elevated dioxin was found in nursing mothers' breast milk a long time ago in the 70s from sprayed areas. So the team that did that looked in sprayed areas, and they did measure the dioxin, and they found elevated levels in some of the women and very highly elevated. We have used up all the time APHA is willing to give us, so let me say the official part of this session is over, but anyone who wants to stay in their seats or coming up afterwards and continue, we have 30 minutes before the second session. So first, thank you very much to all the speakers.
American veterans and Vietnamese we are trying to deal with the legacy of the war by saying to the United States Congress that we have a responsibility to our veterans, to the children of veterans, to the Vietnamese, and to clean up those lands contaminated by dioxin. Legislation is in front of the House now. I know everybody will say, okay, what happens with the new Congress? We have the legislation, we're going to be getting a sponsor, and we'll be moving on it. We just ask that you work with us. My other comment that I wanted to make in terms of disclosure is that my name is Susan Schnall. I was a nurse during the time of the Vietnam conflict, and I took care of the guys who came back. Primarily, it was the guys. It is a really important issue for all of us to deal with the impact and the lasting legacy of war. And I would just ask you to take a look at the information that I have. And if you have any questions, ask me. Thank you, Dr. Schaefer.
Thank you very much. You're going to leave some for distribution?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, we're over, but unofficially, let's keep on going.
The individual I spoke with who's on the Institute of Medicine Committee in Environmental Health at Harvard School of Public Health, now I'm blocking his name, suggested that it might not be dioxin alone, that it may well be the 2,4-D and the 2,5-T that's in Agent Orange. Can you comment about that?
Most recent findings of the Air Force Health Study published by the Joel Mihalik and others suggested that dioxin was definitely contributing to higher levels, led to more prostate cancers and more melanomas, skin cancers, but service in Southeast Asia also contributed to these. And there was a somewhat, oh, thanks, let there be light. There was some feeling that maybe the diabetes data was not so strong, and some of the investigators at NIEHS have kind of modified their finding and say maybe that diabetes type 2 was not so associated with TCDD. Anyway, it's...
I was asking about the 2,4-D.
Yeah, the 2,4-D. We
part of the culprits,
yeah,
as well as the dioxin.
Yeah, the 2,4-D may be, it's not so contaminated with the dioxin that's found in much higher levels than 2,4-5-T. There are some dioxins in 2,4-D, and it may have pathology of its own. Yeah.
And the IOM does look at the individual herbicides, well, not just the alpha. They look at all the different herbicides that were in Vietnam. And I know, I believe I have read somewhere that ALS is more associated with herbicides themselves, not the dioxin.
I don't think it's known.
Ongoing contributors to the dioxin levels in Vietnam right now is the open burning of plastic, including water bottles, mm-hmm, at relatively low temperatures that does not destroy the dioxin and releases it into the environment. And on the other hand, I haven't really seen a public information against burning rubbish villages in Vietnam, which might be a relatively low-cost, high-bang for the buck issue.
You're bringing up an interesting issue. We are studying right now electronic waste recycling out of people's homes in Vietnam. And we think that what we're going to be seeing is the higher chlorinated and brominated dioxins, not 2,3,7-8 TCED, the dioxin which contaminated Agent Orange. We expect that's what we're going to find, but we don't know yet.
Well, my question, Susan, is that we have a sense of the ratio of funds spent on compensating those who went and spread these poisons around to those who had those poisons spread upon them. Mm-hmm. And why is it that our generals who okayed this at the time have not faced criminal charges for essentially permanently poisoning, or at least for thousands of years, poisoning a country that they themselves could easily leave?
The country who wins the wars doesn't pay.
Looking back, we can say, but at the time, it seemed like it was saving lives. And it seemed like
American lives.
American lives and presumably the lives of our allies who are being protected depended by the American people there.
The South Vietnamese.
So talk about
the
RVM. Yeah.
The South Vietnamese.
We talk about it. And it just through your retrospective. We can say this was a bad idea. But there's a long list of things that seemed like a good idea at the time.
Look
back, it was not a good idea.
Yeah, fire.
But that's not the question. In the 1960s, there are internal memos that were not sent that say unequivocally they knew that, in fact, Agent Orange was contaminated by dioxin, and the reason they did nothing about it was because it would impinge on their profits and because the public would have a huge outcry. And I can reference those to you.
Yeah, those are.
Biomedic study in 69.
We firebombed many places.
The reason I raise the question of the HLA testing is because, as a toxicologist, I'm working with people who have illnesses, some of which are relating to the exposures that we're talking about. One of the things that I'm finding is that because they had a genetic predisposition to not be able to clear the toxins have loaded into their system and are so present and playing a role in their ongoing illness. If efforts are made to detoxify them using common sequestering agents, charcoal, clay...
Doesn't work, though. It's been tried in Japan over and over again. With the Yusho rice oil incident, they tried over and over with charcoal, brown rice.
Well, maybe a question of what the regimes were, because we are having success dealing with patients who have degenerative neurologic disorders and reversing them, even at fairly advanced stage. All I'm saying is, it would make sense to look to see if you can find the people who actually are holding on to more because they don't have the cytochrome P450 enzymes to clear these agents, they are the more effective. And if you can work in protocols to try to reduce their load, you may find doing different protocols, I mean different amounts and times and doses and so forth, you may find that it is effective.
Yeah, it's something that needs to be tried, and one of the people in the audience was working at NIEHS to try to figure out who was more susceptible and who wasn't. She was looking at that when she was there. Didn't come to a good conclusion, but sure, it's worth looking at. It's important.
Thank you.